Welcome. My name is Tracy Stevens, and this is the Healing Point Podcast. So, welcome. I'm really pleased to have you here. What is it that you would like to explore today?
I would like to explore endometriosis. It's been a part of my life for since I was in high school. I'm 38 now. I was diagnosed officially, I believe it was when I was 28.
Right.
And the symptoms were decades before that, or it was a decade before that. I would say, you know, honestly, when I was 12 is when I started my menstruation. And when I started high school, it was when I was experiencing symptoms of vomiting on the first day, debilitating pain. Like I would miss usually the first day or so of school. And that carried on until college was when in my early 20s was when I started seeing gynecologists who shared with me that that's just part of the cycle. Perhaps I'm more sensitive to pain. Mm-hmm. And so it was just suggested that I take ibuprofen. My mom also had a lot of pain during her menstrual cycle from an early age.
Right.
And she had shared with me that her sisters were very similar. So it was just perhaps something that ran in the family. And I'm a part of it too.
Yes.
So I just remember my mom's medicine cabinet was just high doses of ibuprofen that I would, you know, I would end up taking hers as well because it was just not enough.
Yes.
Until the point where my doctor then prescribed hormonal contraceptive pills. And I took those on and off because I just never really felt like myself taking them. I felt just off. Yeah. And so they did help. They did, you know, stop my cycle to the point where I wasn't bleeding. And that felt very unnatural to me as well. So fast forward to getting married, wanting to start a family, where I wasn't able to conceive. And I looked into the medication I was taking, ibuprofen, and I read how it can hinder ovulation. So I said, okay, I'll stop taking ibuprofen. And that was kind of my, you know, that was the one thing that helped me to carry on, you know, in my days going to work. And when I stopped that, the pain was just, I really only had one good week every month. The week before my cycle was, it just felt very heavy.
Right.
A lot of pressure. The week of was sharp and, you know, burning like sensations, yeah. In my pelvic region, low back. And then the week after, I think I was just so drained and exhausted from that prior week that I was just very out of it, super fatigued. So my one good week, I would also try to cram it all in. You know, I'm feeling good, which I notice.
Wow.
It's quite common when yes. people live with this kind of pain. You know, they have one good day. So they're like, let me seize the day. But I think that also had this... It just kept me in this vicious cycle, you know, of not getting out, not having more good days. I eventually went to a fertility specialist who, one, even told me I don't have endometriosis. It's not possible. I said, okay, let me try the Eastern medicine route and look into acupuncture. Yeah. You know, I'm not getting the answers through medical Western medicine. So my acupuncturist, she specialized in women's health and in fertility. And when I shared with her my symptoms, she recognized them as endometriosis.
Yes.
And she felt that I needed to see an endometriosis specialist because I wasn't seeing much progress with the acupuncture sessions. I think the greatest thing that came out of that was awareness of what I'm putting in my body. She was the one that, told me to make a list of what I'm eating, journal about how I feel afterwards. So it was just that awareness of, again, what's going yes. in me and how am I feeling afterwards. That was a great thing that came out of that. And yeah, in 2014 was when I had my first surgery, helped me have that official diagnosis. I yes. say first because I didn't have any relief from that one. I would say I was almost worse than I felt before. And I think it was also the technique of the surgeon that he had used. He had used, I believe, ablation where they burned the tissue. He was the first doctor, the first surgeon that said, yes, I believe you have endometriosis and I can help you. So there was a lot of like, oh, this is it, I'm going to be free from this. But I didn't really have a true connection with the surgeon, after having painful symptoms months later, his answer was to just put me on, Lupron. So putting me into menopause. Yes. And I remember I took one dose and my face just went gray. And I'm like, I cannot take this. And I didn't want to be on medication anymore, knowing yeah. that I wanted to conceive and I wanted to prepare my body for carrying a child. So I did my yeah. research. I found a surgeon that, was aligned with my values.
Right.
And that surgery was a success. I felt completely different a month later. He was actually the first surgeon that I had met who said, okay, we've done the surgery, we've excised all the cells, but you got to do your part. You got to eat well and you got to move your body. And that's right. when I really dedicated my practice into with yoga. And my husband took on the path of the nutrition aspect. And so a lot of healing took place with those. Wow. And so my symptoms have been in remission, I would say, for the past 5 years. Now when I did have my period, there it's perhaps a day or two of still intense pain, but I can still go for a walk.
Right.
Whereas before, I was in crippling pain before.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that journey with me. No, it's great because so many people will be able to resonate with your story. And there's just one thing I'd like to ask about it, because I know that people will then ask, was the difference between the two surgeries? What was different about the second surgery that it was much more helpful and aligned for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, the second surgeon, he did excision surgery, no burning. His technique, he uses a blue aqua dye because the endometrial cells can be different colors. Some of them are even clear. So many women who have multiple surgeries, it's because a lot of the endometrial cells are left behind.
Yes.
And so they still continue to have the same issues. And so when he uses this blue aqua dye, it highlights all the cells. And then he goes in there and he cold cuts essentially.
Right.
Without burning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I had the surgery 11 months later, and it was incredible to see how much more he had found. Also, he really took his time, the first consultation, to get to know us, my husband and I. He really asked questions about what I was hoping for, and for me, I think also my mindset changed. The first surgery was, yes, finally I have a name, it's endometriosis, I want to get rid of it. And I want to, and the goal was, let me get pregnant. Whereas the second time around was, you know, it wasn't so much something to get rid of. It was more of the mindset of, I really want to nurture and take care of my body. It's been hurting for a long time. I don't want to have another surgery after this. So this was kind of like, this is going to be the last one, because I just don't want to put my body through that again. And it was not even more about wanting to conceive, but it was just improving my quality of life. So that if I were to ever have a child, I could be around for my child and really enjoy life with him or her.
That's really interesting. So there was a completely different mindset for you when you went into that surgery, which I think is really important to make note of. So just to complete the story, you managed to conceive.
Yes. After my husband and I had made, you know, the changes in our life after that second surgery, within a year, our whole perspective on what's important to us changed. We were, you know, initially it was all about the career and buy a home. And, you know, it's very, I think, a cliche to say, you know, we checked all those boxes and we were still feeling like there was something, like there was more to enjoy out there. And, we ended up leaving our jobs because we knew it wasn't something that was fulfilling us. And we decided to travel. And a year into my yoga training, I fell pregnant.
Wow.
That was 2017. And, you know, when I took the test, I wasn't surprised. It was something I tell my friends and my family. I knew everything we had done led to, you know, she knew I was ready.
Yes. Oh, that's so beautiful. It's just really lovely to hear that full story of your of your endometriosis journey. Thank you for that. I really appreciate it. But let's explore then a little bit more about where that endometriosis might have its roots for you as well, because you mentioned your mum also had lots of pain, and I think this is the thing with the menstrual cycle is when I talk about the menstrual cycle, I think of it like a rhythm that we're tuned into. The universe has its rhythm and the moon has its rhythm. And from our ancient roots, our cycles are very tied into universal cycles. Mm-hmm. And they're tied into the cycles of our mothers and our grandmothers. Because you were formed in the ovaries of your grandmother, you know, the egg that became you, which is always very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So I often think, you know, it's this mitochondrial DNA that is carried through us and through the female line, which is a whole fascinating subject. But there you are starting your periods, and this whole background of a rhythm and cycle is out of balance already.
Mm-hmm.
So you're growing up in an environment where the cycles are out of rhythm and out of balance.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But we can only really deal with ourselves, of course, and we can only deal with our own issues in the here and now. But I think it's just quite nice to put that background into perspective. So what interests me is where and why the cycle goes out of rhythm in the first place. Now, I think this is society. I think this is culture. I think this is generational. I think this is where women in gender have become more out of balance and in oppression, inability to live to their full potentials. So I'm just wondering if you know of any family history of the women in your ancestry, and whether there was oppression, trauma. Just out of interest, to put the background in.
I often think about this because I know that I was born in a time in Iran, which was during the revolution. So there was a war happening when my mom was pregnant with me. And I was born in the hospital with her, and she, with her obviously, but I meant the fact that she was alone. My dad wasn't there with her. Right. And so I can just only imagine the state of the world at the time in her mind. And, there's a lot of fear. Mind you, she was also 19 years old, yes. and married at 18. I don't know so much about my grandmother. I don't know, from what I gather her with my grandmother and my grandfather, I don't know if they had, an unconditionally loving relationship. It didn't seem as if it was. And she, had five daughters herself. My mom's the oldest.
Right.
Of the five. Yeah. But yeah, it always, from what I gather, that life was not easy. It was a hardship.
Yes. And so, we carry that hardship, and it shows in our bodies, of course.
Yeah.
And so for you, growing up in the household that you did, how was the environment you grew up in? What did it feel like to you?
I've worked with many therapists, and the first thing that comes up is I don't really remember my childhood.
Okay.
Like, I don't actually have memories. I just remember being, there's a sense, the word lonely comes up for me.
Okay. Yeah.
When my parents moved from Iran to the States, I was, I believe, under a year. And they both attended university. So I was in daycare. And when I was 6 years old, my mom had a son. And he passed after, I think he was only a couple weeks that he had passed.
Right.
And within the month of his passing, we moved to different states. And so there was just, from what I remember, we never really talked about things,
yes.
All, difficult things were kept quiet. What I can remember is people always looking at me and saying, oh, is something wrong with Hoda? Because I was always known as being really quiet to myself, and also labeled as the sensitive, I'm overly sensitive or I'm too emotional.
Right.
As a child, I can't recall happy memories.
Well, there's often a reason why we don't remember our childhood, and that's because when there's a lot of stress hormone, traveling through our bodies, we don't lay the long-term memories down, because we're all based on the immediate moment and being vigilant. So when people say to me, I don't remember much of my childhood, it always is a little red light to me, saying there was stress. There was, and it's stressful being on your own. It's stressful feeling lonely. It's stressful when there's grief and there's moving and there's an isolation. And I feel it from your words. Is like there's a singularity, a separation almost.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And although my symptoms are in remission, I think for the most part, those feelings still feel alive.
Are there particular times that you notice when they feel alive in you?
I'm in a new place where there's not a lot happening. And in Barcelona, the city, and where I was in California, there was a lot of distractions. Yeah. And now we've been here for a couple of years, and more connected to nature. There's more quiet, there's more peace, but it's very difficult for me to just be.
So it's reflecting, and I find this happens in people's lives. They get these reflections of childhood, and sometimes that happens to allow those emotions to come up for healing. But maybe something in the quietness is reflecting the separateness for you of your childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Well, moving on to the time when you started your first periods, and, 11, 12, I think you said, Do you remember how that was for you emotionally?
Emotionally, I felt a little scared. I didn't know what was really happening. I do remember my mom calling her best friends and they were congratulating me, but there was no permission of, can I share with my friends that this is happening to you? And one, I don't even know what's happening to me, but apparently everyone's happy about it and I'm still in the dark.
Right. Yeah. So not much information and not that much understanding at the time. And the emotional flow of a cycle means that very often is that as we get towards a period, everything is being pulled upwards for release. When I say emotionally, I mean, so emotions that are suppressed the rest of the month are coming up and rising up to be released in the same way as the tide moves.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering whether you were aware of that cycle and how you felt emotionally before a period and whether you felt that buildup of emotion, as a teenager.
I don't believe the self-awareness was there back then.
Yeah.
It is. It has been now. I mean, when you're explaining that, definitely a tide of anger. Anger is a strong emotion. Irritability, frustration, wanting, like, I don't, and this is not an emotion, but just the sense of I don't have control. And when the period, when I start menstruating, and then it's like a deep drop of sadness and grief. Mm-hmm.
So that's beautifully described, because that anger is the important emotion for me in terms of endometriosis. It's being pulled up to be released, premenstrually. And so many people will be familiar with this feeling. What happened in your family if you were angry or you felt angry?
There's something wrong with me.
Right.
I should go talk to a therapist because there's seriously something wrong with you. Yeah.
So what did you do with that anger?
Oh, cried a lot.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. Take your time.
And I kept it to myself a lot. I would go and I spent a lot of time in my room with the door closed. And I slept a lot.
Yes. Yeah. So disassociated.
Yeah. There were many, many moments where I just didn't want to be alive anymore because it was too painful. It always felt like it was my fault. If there was any kind of disruption, I must have been in the wrong. I never felt safe to share my emotions.
Okay.
Never.
Yeah, so not surprising really that your body showed them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is what happens, is the emotions come up through our bodies because we're not allowed to speak them, or we feel we can't. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And there's still a charge there for you, still an emotional charge. Okay.
Yeah. And there's this, I think there's still a lot in me that wants to be expressed and released.
So you've been conditioned to hold those emotions in.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel now about if you feel angry or frustrated? Are you able to express it more easily now?
I still struggle with reactivity. And I think being a mother to a daughter, I experience a lot of guilt because the way I express the anger can come out towards wanting to control things or being frustrated. So there is still those patterns there. That I don't believe are you know, healthy for myself or my daughter and our relationship. The difference is that now I recognize it much more quickly. Although the expression of anger still comes out in ways that I'm, you know, I would like to, for them to be different. The aftermath is very different than what I experienced in my relationship with my mother, because there was no acknowledgement there in her treatment towards me. And my dad was, he never treated me the way my mother did, but he was always the one that wanted to, I think, keep the peace. And he, majority of the time, all the time, sided with her. So that's where I always felt like there was no one on my side to empathize or to hold space for me, or, you know, just wrap my their arms around, be like, you know, it's okay, or I made a mistake. You know, there was just none of that. So that's one thing that I've worked at being different.
So you were never modeled a way of expressing yourself in a healthy emotional way. You had to contain and control.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And when you think of that in terms of the uterus, which is what I think is really interesting, is the uterus is, you know, it's designed to expand and to contract and to be this empty space. And in endometriosis, there's so much control over that expansion and contraction. It's just that physical constraining and constricting tissue that's formed. It's like, and that just reflects in what happens, as in, I can't expand my energy and I can't express and open. I just have to keep contracting. I have to squeeze everything in and hold it in. So that womb, which should be an open, empty, flowing, fluid space, becomes a tight and contracted.
Absolutely.
Does that make
sense?
Beautifully
described. Yes. Yeah.
And the emotions are just reflective, or the womb is reflective of the emotions, I probably should say. In that scenario. So in terms of like moving forward now, maybe it's just worth looking at what happens to you when you get angry or frustrated. That happens quite a lot, you're saying? In truth,
yes. It's cyclical. Yeah, with my menstrual cycle, it's still
there.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I'm prioritizing myself in the sense of caring and nurturing myself, regular time to practice yoga, go for walks, gratitude journaling. I feel like I have all, you know, I have these things I need to do.
Yes.
It's much better. It's, you know, in terms of how I express my emotions. However, this is one thing I wanted to bring up with you, is that I feel like I have to do all those things to be able to tame the reactivity. I want to be able to have the flexibility where if I'm not able to do all those things, it's more about not doing those things, I guess. It's living with the qualities that those things bring into my life.
Yes. And so this brings me to that, when you said tame the reactivity, let's give that reactivity a more of an image. What does it feel like inside of you?
I actually see a young child who just has nowhere to go in this dark place, a young child, I think, really frightened.
Is that the child that you want to tame?
No. No.
So is there another part of you that you want to tame that isn't the frightened child?
The words aren't coming.
So I know, so this is sometimes the way, because you know that the depth of the emotion is coming from the sad child that feels alone.
Yeah.
But the anger and the frustration that comes out of you, is that the same child? Or do you see the anger as something that you want to tame? You know, as you said, tame, I think of a tiger or, you know, this really powerful part of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting when just thinking about all these things, because when I think about at the peak of my symptoms, when things were really bad, I mentioned it was like I was burning inside.
Yes.
Literally, I felt like my insides were on fire. Perhaps it's not to tame, but it needs this like I don't know, just imagining aloe vera, just like some like cool, calm, like essence.
Yeah, and that's the aim, isn't it? But I suppose what I'm thinking is what's your attitude towards your anger? If you get frustrated with your daughter, and then afterwards you reflect on it.
Yeah. My attitude towards it is, am I ever going to change?
Right.
I know better. I've done all this work. I've read all these books. You know, why am I still repeating this? Being down, you know, putting myself down.
And that bit of yourself, that frustration reactive part of you, what do you think about that part of you? What's your feeling about it? I mean, do you like it? Do you not like it?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I sense that it wants to change. It wants to evolve.
Yeah.
It wants that expansion. But it's like, it's stuck.
Yes.
You know, and this word comes up for me, stuck too, because when I was giving birth to my daughter, I tried to do a home birth and her head was a little bit tilted to the side, but I felt like no matter how hard I pushed, no matter how much the midwives tried to change her position, I just felt like she was stuck.
Right.
And I couldn't let her out.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Knowing about, you know, the left side of the body and the right side and how they also have different representations. And I just remember being so hunched over to my left side.
Right.
Side that's, you know, that felt so constricted, that represents femininity and, you know, creative expression. That side was just so locked.
So I'm just going to suggest this as a way of moving forward, that you get to know the anger inside of you, because that is it, you know, it probably is still a child part, but a raging child part, the child who is banging her fists and going, why don't they listen to me, and why am I on my own, and why don't they do things that other people's mums and dads seem to do? And does that resonate?
It does resonate a lot.
And so often anger isn't accepted. If I show this anger, I'm not going to be accepted by my family. They're going to think there's something wrong with me, so I can't actually show it. And when it comes up, it's just really annoying, because actually I don't want it there and I don't want to be like that. So that child part of you that is like raging, is you're pushing her away even more.
Yeah.
It's important to get to know that part of you. What does that part of you actually want? What's she actually angry about? What does she need?
Mm-hmm.
And then when the frustration comes up and you feel it in your body, because this is something we haven't talked about, but those feelings, when you get frustrated or angry, you feel them in your body, don't you?
Yeah.
And you don't want to feel them.
Yes.
It's those moments when you pause and go, what is it that this angry voice wants right now?
Yeah.
What is it that she's looking for? What's she looking for to be different?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. Give it a voice versus shut it down like it has been.
So let's just do this really quickly. Just as a quick exercise, when was the last time, you know, I'm talking about little things that is where you got irritated or irritable or frustrated? Was there an argument with somebody or just a little fallout or?
Let's see. I think I tend to feel frustrated. It comes up with my daughter and her nap.
Right.
And often when she's sleeping, she'll wake up mid nap and she'll just cry for me, calling me. And the only way she'll go back to sleep is if I go in there and hold her hand. And a part of me is, kind of feels frustrated because I sense like I don't have the freedom to do what I need to do during that time. And so sometimes the tone of my voice, you know, rather than it being gentle, like, I'm coming, I'll be right there. There's an undertone of frustration and, you know, I'm coming.
Yeah. You can't hide it. And what happens in your body in those moments?
Hearts. My chest feels constricted, kind of heart racing. My body just in general tightens.
So it tightens. What's actually the need at that point? What's the need?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need when she's calling you and you feel immediately you feel that trigger? I'm just trying to go into it a little bit more so we can really get to the root of it.
I think the need is, I mean, the word that comes to me is autonomy, like choice.
Right. Okay. Let's just stay with that then. So she needs the choice. This part of you is frustrated because she has no choice.
Mm-hmm.
She feels she has no choice and she has to do that, so do something at that moment.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it true? Is it true that you have no choice but to go and attend to your child? Right.
Yeah. My thought is no, because my husband's here. I could ask for help.
Why don't you think you do? What's happened in the past, in your childhood? Did you feel you had no choice but to do as you were told?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes. There was not an option. I wasn't given options.
So looking at that then, can you see how the child part of you is controlling your nervous system at that point? Mm-hmm. You're being asked to do something.
Yeah.
Your body tenses because it's, you know, you're just being asked to do something and I've got no choice.
Yeah.
But it's not true as the adult.
Yeah.
In the past, as a child, you had no power. You had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's related to the power. So we use anger to create power, to create this energy. Mm-hmm. Of being able to say no.
Yeah.
So that becomes the habit. If I have to say no, or if I have to refuse somebody, I have to use anger to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is this making sense?
It does make a lot of sense. Yes. Which is why I can see I've avoided, being in conflict.
Yes.
You know, because I'm afraid to say no. I'm afraid of, if I say no, there'll be rejection, abandonment.
Yeah. And so this is essentially, it's about your boundaries. It's about being able to ask for help. It's being able to put that adult mind into your life, soothing, because you are actually in conflict. You're in conflict all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what your body is when you're, you know, maybe not as much as you were.
Yeah.
But the conflict is still in there. The feeling I have to do something.
Yeah.
Whereas if you can, in those moments, if you can notice that and you can pause and go, well, actually, I don't have to respond right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what? I can feel the need to respond because that's my habitual pattern. And the
yes,
but actually, you know, yeah. And you picture that child and you go, yeah, you know what? You can do what you like, actually. You know, you don't have to. You don't have to do that.
Yes. Yes.
You can be what you want to be.
I love that. You know, as we're talking, I was, my nervous system, I start to, it's warm outside, but when we're talking about a topic that's challenging our heart, I was shaking a bit mid conversation.
Yeah.
But now I feel so much more calmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just notice that. Because what you're doing is you're going to allow that part of you to be who she wants to be. And in that, you're going to allow your daughter to be who she wants to be. And you'll be less controlling over her behavior and how it affects you.
Yeah.
And so it's just recognizing that that doesn't have to be your reaction. You know, you can integrate it into this more this calmer life. You don't have to persuade that part of you to let go or be quiet, or let's just be grateful. Let's not be grateful. Let's look at the truth of it and let's see, is it true? Is it true that I have no choice? Is it true that I'm powerless now?
Yeah, beautiful.
There's some things to think about there and to work on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Thank you. That is very helpful. Tying it to past conditioning and I'm no longer that young child who was afraid of abandonment and rejection in a much different place. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much, Tracy.
You're so welcome. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, you'll find a lot more content on my Instagram account at thehealingpoint.underscore. If you have a question you'd like to explore and are willing to take part in the podcast, you'll find all the information you need on my website, which is www.tracystevens.org/podcast. Thanks and see you soon.